and that's what's eating me up. So I say, I'm doing something, but then I don't know how to continue and just let that bullshit hang there.
Okay,
she says, and I don't want to talk about it yet.
All right.
But I love you.
I love you too. That's why I'm marrying you, Detective.
It's gonna be a great wedding, I say, then realize it might not be. But she says,
I know. I'm not worried about the wedding. I don't even care about the wedding. I just like being here with everyone else, you know? And you. I like the islands. I don't think we spend enough time on the islands.
I love it here, I say. Hey, you know what Nolan told me tonight?
What?
He was looking for a babysitter so he could take Ivy out on a date.
Did he find one?
No idea. But I like the thought of a date with you, Miss Cookie. She snort laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's make our last day together as single people a date day. What do you say?
One last date before we're married. You're building up some high expectations in me, Detective.
I laugh, but she's right.
What will we do?
She asks. We could... I start thinking up ways to impress Cinderella Shrike. Something spectacular, and fun, and sexy. And that we can do on an island. Scuba diving, snorkeling, surfing. Not that this place is really surfable, but we could try. Or maybe build a sand castle, or have a picnic, or hike around the island. Maybe there's a cave. We like spelunking. But we've done it all. Our lives this past year have been exciting and fun. Pretty much 100% of the time.
You know what?
Cindy says, reaching down to grab my dick. What? I say, turning into her so I can kiss the soft skin of her breasts.
Leave it to me. You've got something on your mind, so let me take care of it.
I wait to see if she's gonna ask me more, if she wants to know what I'm up to. What's got me so worried? Is she picturing me getting caught? On trial for any of the nefarious things I've done in the past? Serving time? Leaving her alone? Adrift? Lonely?
Okay?
She asks in my silence. Okay, I say, bringing my kiss up to her lips. I just want to enjoy her. Forever. But forever is a myth. I think everyone knows that. In the back of their heads, right? There's no such thing as forever. So weddings, that whole eternity thing, it's bugging me.
Chapter 12. Ollie. Hey, I call out to Cindy the next morning as Kat opens the bungalow door and waves her inside. Where's Pax? Sleeping off a wicked hangover after getting drunk all by himself last night? Katya and I both exchange raised eyebrows. What's that all about? I ask. Cindy sighs and then slumps down into a chair. He does drink a lot, Kat says. Which I cannot argue with. Fucking Mysterious has been known to drink before noon plenty of days, but he doesn't often go on binges. It's usually just a glass of scotch when things blow up. He likes to pour them and then not finish them, too. I think it's a habit, like... The act of handling that crystal decanter and the clink of the ice just kinda sets his world right, so he can think straight. He's not an alcoholic, I say, shooting Katya a look. She shoots one back. I didn't say that. I know he's not an alcoholic, you guys, Cindy says. I've lived with him for a year now, which is why last night kinda worries me. You're right, Ollie. He doesn't go on binges unless shit is really wrong. So what's wrong with him? I ask. Now it's Katya's turn to shoot me a look. What? I ask. I'm still trying to figure it out. We're going on a date today. That sounds fun, Kat says, folding her legs underneath her as she relaxes on the couch. What are you guys gonna do? I don't know yet. It was his idea, but then he looked really worried that he might not come up with something worthy of the day before our wedding. So I told him I'd do it. I say... You should hang out with all of us. No, Kat says. They want to be alone, Oliver, not hang out with a bunch of people. Yeah, which is why I suggested it. I still can't picture my little sister with my best friend. I'll think of something, Cindy says. If there's one thing I've got going for me, it's my bountiful imagination. I'm pretty sure Mysterious is far more interested in your bountiful other things. They both shoot me a look. Then Cindy stands up and says, "You guys should go on a date, too." But she's talking to Katya, not me. "Keep my brother out of my business, because I might punch him if he doesn't get over this stupid little sister bullshit." "You're the one who came over here," I shout, but she's already gone. "What is your problem?" Kat asks. "My problem is that my best friend stole my baby sister."
"Stole her, Oliver? Really? Stole her?"
"Yeah," I say. "Like, how is this rocket science? I got one little sister, Kat, one, and he took her. It's not right."
"She tricked him."
"She was practically a baby when that happened. It was last year. Exactly my point. Besides, he's Mr. Fucking Mysterious. He can't figure out the jailbait girl at his front door bringing him sandwiches, who looks exactly like my mom, by the way, is off limits." Katya just laughs at me.
"You're being ridiculous."
"I'm being..." "No, he stole my sister." She scrunches her eyebrows up at me, opens her mouth, pauses, then says,
"You're not mad at Five. And if you ask me, he did a lot worse than sweep your sister off her feet."
"Five's different," I say. "I mean, come on. He's Five."
"So? Pax is one of your oldest friends. He saved your ass, right? He'd do anything for you. You've barely seen Five, yet you make all the excuses for him."
"Five and Rory? Well, it's just different, Kat. You don't understand."
"Then explain it to me."
"They're like soulmates. They've known each other since birth. Rory belonged to Five before I was even born. It's just different."
"Okay," she says. "But you know what?"
"What?" I ask, tired of this conversation.
"I have no family, Oliver."
I look over at her, suddenly feeling stupid.
"No one but you. I have no parents. My sister is dead. Everything is gone."
"I didn't mean it. I mean, I'm sorry, Kat."
"Don't be sorry for me. I have so much more now that I became a part of your world. And I consider Pax a friend, more than just a friend. He's like a brother now. And Mac, too. And Nolan and West. They're the brothers I never had. And I think we both know that if I was in trouble and you weren't around, I could go to them, any of them, and they'd take care of me. But you know exactly who I'd go to first, right?"
I roll my eyes.
"Say it," she says. "Because you need to stop this stupidity and admit what you won't."
"Fine," I say. "You'd go to Pax. He'd take care of everything like it never happened. You'd never get caught. I should be happy he's the one taking care of my sister. I should get over it and wish them well, etc., etc., etc." She just does one of those little huffs, like a laugh but not a laugh. "What now? You really can't see what you're doing? What am I doing?" She crawls across the couch and places herself in my lap, both hands on my cheeks as she stares down at me. She kisses me, just a small kiss, but she's smiling as she does it. I can feel her grin.
"You're being you, I guess."
I think about that for a second. "You make that sound like a bad thing."
"Nope,"
Kat whispers, still kissing me, but then she sighs and drops her head to my chest.
"Your sister. Not Cindy, Rory. She's amazing."
"Yeah," I say, even though I barely know her. What I know of Rory is mostly based on memory, and those memories are mostly that summer Five came home. And I tricked her, and I tricked him, and things were good. And the days were long and hot and perfect.
"Cindy and I tried on our dresses last night."
"Yeah?" I ask. I cannot fucking wait to see Katya in her dress. I'm really looking forward to this wedding. Not just for us, even though I think we need this milestone, but the whole thing. All the guys and all their girls, and Five is going to marry Rory for real. It's just kind of great.
"And Cindy said she was having second thoughts about her dress, that it was too risque and showed too much leg. But I said, that's just you, right? So why not be you on your special day? And Cindy said, yeah, you're right. Maybe it needs to be even sexier."
"Jesus," I moan.
So Rory says, "I can alter it if you want." Make it your dream dress?
God, she's just like my mom. I like hearing this stuff about Rory.
So she does that. She adds some lace and cuts a slit and starts sewing. And then Rory looks at me and says, "Is this your dream dress, Kat?" I like how she calls me Kat and not Katya, like we're already old friends. So I say, "Yeah, pretty much." I feel like I tried on hundreds of dresses, and every time I thought one was better than the rest, it was almost too much, you know? And now I think maybe I made a mistake. So Rory says, "What would you do different?" So I say, "I'd maybe like it to be a little more traditional, you know, like glass beads and shit." I'm transfixed as I picture the whole scene. So Rory says, "I have some glass beads. Should I sew them onto your bodice?" And I say, "Yeah, do it." So she does. Well, she's doing it today, or did it last night, or whatever. All I know is that it's special, right? That your sister is adding to my dress? I love it, actually. Because I love her. I love all of them, even bitchy Ariel. I snort laugh at that. I feel like I'm gaining so much, you know? Even though I'm still pretty new and your mom looks at me funny sometimes, I think one day it'll all be normal. I hug her close, hold her tight, kiss her neck. I'm sorry your family is gone, but Marielle will be here too. I know, she smiles. I know. I love Marielle. And I suddenly get it. And you love Pax because of Marielle, I say. She nods. I think so. He's nice to me, so it's like he's family in all the ways, Oliver. You're lucky to have so much family. You should enjoy him, and he and Cindy are perfect for each other. Leave them alone. Be supportive. It's not really him you're mad at anyway.
Then she gets up and says,
I'm taking a shower. Come fuck me against the wall.
I laugh and follow her in, and I do fuck her against the wall. But then later, when I'm holding her hand and we're walking up to Rory's house to find some breakfast, I wonder what she meant about that statement. Who does she think I'm really mad at?
Chapter 13. 5. I'm outnumbered. That's the thing when you live on an island with nothing but females. Well, mostly females. We have a cook who's a guy, and the helicopter pilot, he's a guy. And we used to have a horse trainer who was a guy, but he's been gone for a while now. And the cook doesn't even talk to me because I'm kind of a picky eater. And the pilot is, well, only here to fly the fucking helicopter. And helicopters aren't really conducive for complaining about your wife and daughters ganging up on you. So it's just me and them. And right now they're all glaring at me. Even Louise is against me. Sweet, tiny 5-year-old Louise stomps her foot and says, I want to go to school too. Jesus. You're not part of this conversation, I say, pointing my finger at her. She stomps her foot again, crosses her arms in defiance, and then pouts her lips. Go play, I say, pointing to her and Matilda. They both hesitate, wondering how far they should push this, but I make dead eyes at them, and that's all it takes. They sulk off, complaining the whole time. I take my attention back to Ellie, Ming, Rory, Anna, and Izza. 5 fucking girls, all of them against me. Listen, I say, switching into my reasonable voice. No, you listen, Rory says. Ming is here. We've been planning this for months, and the girls want to take the test, don't you girls? There's a chorus of, yes, Daddy, we do. And I wonder if they plan that twin shit, or if they make that harmony just on instinct. I should ask my brother and sister, they're twins too. You're not gonna win, Max says from the kitchen. He's leaning against the countertop eating a bowl of cereal, acting like this is no big deal. Just let them take the test, what can it hurt? What can it hurt? I sigh. It can ruin everything. All the planning and shit we've been doing for, well, half our lifetimes, it seems now. It's not far from us, Mac continues. We'll keep an eye on them. I shoot Rory a look, because there's no way she's gonna let her little girls go off to boarding school. No way. If they go, we all go. And this island life will be over. I run my fingers through my hair and turn to look out the window. Take it all in. Already missing it. Fine, I whisper. And the entire room erupts in cheers. I don't cheer or feel happy. In fact, I think I'm the only one on this island who thinks today is the worst day ever.
Let's go, girls, Ming says. I'm ready when you are.
It's a long test, like four parts to it or something like that. I took it once, a long time ago in some other life I barely remember. I turned to watch them disappear out the door. Rory and Ellie set up the palapa near the pool for testing. I guess if you gotta take an all-day test, this isn't a bad way to do it.
Don't be mad at me, Rory says, grabbing hold of my arm and tugging me towards her.
But I am kinda mad. You should have talked to me about it first.
You would have said no,
Rory says. Which should have been your first clue that this wasn't a decision you can just make on your own.
I get a say, Five Aston. After all these years of doing what you think is best, it's my turn to take the reins. And it's your turn to listen.
I don't want to fight with her. We're not that kind of couple. We don't normally have much to argue about. But then there's this little voice in my head that's telling me that's because she gives in to you five, and you let her.
This is going to be good for us five, Rory insists.
But I don't agree. And she knows me well enough to see that written all over my face. I just don't agree. She walks off, disappearing outside with the girls. You don't want to fuck this up, Max says, still slurping his cereal. No, I say, turning to face him. Fucking this up is the only thing left to do. I need you to steal those tests, Perfect. Maybe we can replace them with altered tests, like make sure the girls fail. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Are you listening to yourself? Or them? Your family is sick of this place, Five. Paradise isn't paradise when it's nothing but a prison. There's a whole world out there, and your family needs to see it.
The whole world is gunning for us, Mac. How do you, of all people, not see that?
Maybe that was true once, he says, coming towards me, his flip-flops snapping on his feet as he walks. But hell, even if they were coming, we know their game now. We're ready for it, and you can just move to Colorado with them. Make them live at your home with you. That's what I'd do.
Colorado.
I just stare at him, speechless. The worst, absolute fucking worst place they could go. If they're looking for us, that's where they'll look first. You're paranoid, you know that?
Fuck you.
And stupid, he says, walking over to the door like he's done with me. Because Colorado is the safest place on Earth. Everyone is already there. Me, Nolan and Ivy, West and Tori, Pax and Cindy, Oliver and Katja. Not to mention your psycho father and those crazy Shrike sisters. Hell, Spencer Shrike scares the shit out of me, man. And Veronica's brothers? He shakes his head. Dude, he says, throwing up his hands. Colorado is filled with some of the most dangerous people ever, and they all seem to be related to you in some way. You've practically got an army there. What the fuck more do you need? I try to think real fast. Try to come up with some salient point that will sway everyone back to my side, but Mac makes it to the door and leaves before I come up with it. James! I yell after him. James Fenici would never do this! James Fenici knows what's up. He's kept his family secluded on an island for longer than me, and he's the best. The motherfucking best. I'm doing my best, I yell. But there's no one left to hear me. No one cares what I think. They want their freedom. Fuck safety. Fuck all my best-laid plans. Fuck paradise. My kids want school, and friends, and parties, and dances, and dresses, and boyfriends. And my wife wants... What does Rory want out of this? More friends? Access to stores? A river in the backyard instead of an ocean? But it's not any of those things, and I know it. My queen wants her family back. Our small unit just isn't enough anymore.
Chapter 14. Mac. I can sorta see Five's point, sorta, but he's Five fucking Aston. He's got so much going for him. And yeah, that's not a guarantee, but there's no such thing as a guarantee in life. At the very least, he's got the odds stacked in his favor. I should probably be more worried than I am. I don't have shit compared to him. Well, except the other misters. I think Mysterious and Match make up for most of what I'm lacking. And I'd never count Corporate out when it comes to sneaky plans. Dude had that secret his whole life and never told anyone. It's impressive. Not to mention Tori. Jesus, and Katya, and Cindy. Plus, Nolan can fly a plane and a helicopter, and he's rich as fuck. He's got way more money than I do these days. So we have no shortage of funding. Nope, I'm not gonna worry about shit unless I have to, and so far, I see no evidence that we're still in danger. I'm not blind. I know that the security I feel today can turn into imminent danger tomorrow, but why worry about tomorrow when today is all you got? You're not gonna stay here, are you? I ask Ellie as I walk up to the table under the palapa. Ellie is out by the pool with Ming, Rory, and the girls. Cindy is here now, too, busy talking to her newly acquired nieces. Nah, Ellie says, sliding her arm behind my back and hooking a finger into the belt loop of my cargo shorts. I hear today is date day. Is it? I chuckle. Yes. Cindy just said so. What'd I say? She asks, coming toward us. It's date day, right? She frowns and looks up at me. Yeah, we want to have a date day, but I'm in charge of the date planning since PAX is all fucking morose and shit, and I don't know what to do. Why is he morose? I ask. Morose isn't a word I'd normally use to describe Mr. Mysterious. Cindy blows out a long sigh. I think he's worried about getting married. I squint my eyes at her. Worried how? He's been singing this stupid song since yesterday. He was even humming it in his sleep. What song? I ask. I want to be an airborne ranger. She sings out the title, and I recognize it immediately from some movie I saw as a kid. I say. Yeah, she huffs. He's already missing his life of blood and danger. How can marriage compete with that? I don't think that's it, Ellie says. No? Cindy says. Well, I do. Which means I need a really good idea for date day. Help me. You should do what Mac did to win me over, Ellie says. What did I do? I ask. Ellie shoots me an annoyed look. The scavenger hunt? Oh, yeah, I laugh. That was pretty fucking cool. Scavenger hunt. Cindy thinks this over for a few seconds. That sounds fun. Tell me all about it. So Ellie starts talking and we relive the night together, leaving out most of the sexy stuff, as Cindy listens. Date day, huh? Not a bad idea. I mean, Ellie has been down about this baby stuff. I should make her forget about it by planning a date day. So I say, hey, I'll catch up with you later. And then leave to go find Nolan. He is, after all, Mr. Fucking Romantic. He'll have a good idea about what makes a good date day. I turn a corner on a jungle path and practically bump into him. Hey, I say, where are you going? Up to Five's house. He eyes me for a second. I wait for him to add to that, but he doesn't, so I say, why? Just, no reason. Okay, whatever. Romantic can keep his damn secrets. Well, I need some advice. About what? He asks, looking past me down the path. Date day. Apparently Cindy is doing this date day thing. That was my fucking idea, he interjects. Well, that makes sense, and thank you, because it seems to have caught on, and I'm doing it too, which is why I was looking for you. I need a good date day, dude. Something that will make Ellie forget about not being pregnant. He scrubs a hand down his face as he thinks. Just go the dirty sex route, he finally says. I gotta go. And then he's off. Fucker. Dirty sex route, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty good at the dirty sex stuff. Well, the fun kind, at least. But I could have used a little fucking guidance, you know? Fucker. And now I'm pissed that Cindy is taking my scavenger hunt idea, because that was goddamned clever. And I really need a clever idea. This is the day before our wedding. I need to show Ellie how much I love her. My idea needs to be original and fun, romantic and sexy. It needs to be everything. Just like that night we fell in love. I need surprises. But how do you surprise someone you've shown all your secrets to? We own a helicopter, so I can't even pretend that a helicopter ride around the Caribbean would work. We've been on a boat, we've been scuba diving, and there's no way in hell I can make a picnic on the beach good enough to wow the woman I love. Just then corporate appears in a path ahead, crossing the path I'm already on. Hey! I call out. He turns, frowns, and then says, what's up? I need an idea, dude, for a date day. Date day? You're doing that too? Seems to be the thing to do today. I need something good, West. What can I do on this island? You can take my boat if you want. Where to? I ask. I mean, where the fuck is there to go? He thinks for a second. Like maybe he's picturing the sea in his head trying to come up with a destination. There's an island about 10 miles west of here. They have caves there. How do you know that? I ask. It's my fucking job to know that. So I checked the whole area out before we came. You could take her into that cave. There might be tourists there, though. Ethan loved it when we stopped on the way here. Had the time of his life scrambling around exploring. I say, thinking. I don't know. Sounds kind of dangerous. Corporate snort laughs. Okay, well, I gotta go. I'm thinking of my own date day. What's your idea? I ask. Fuck you, he says. I'm not telling you my amazing plan. But then he turns, reaching into his pocket, and throws me some keys. I catch them in my hand. Stare at them for a second. Take the boat, Mac. Go see that island. Go walk in those caves, or just lie on the beach and play with the pigs. And if that doesn't work, tell her something amazing. Something you'd never tell anyone else. I've got the coordinates set up in my navigation because we're going to stop on our way home. Take her there. It's been a long time since you did something spontaneous. He walks away. I'm spontaneous, I call back. Fuck you! I'm totally spontaneous. No, he yells back, already out of sight. You're predictable. Fuck him. Am I predictable? I ask myself that all the way down to the marina, where I look at his boat and wonder if I should risk some time off the island. Inside, I find the coordinates in the GPS system and look at the backlit screen as it charts a course. 10 miles. It's not so far. I leave the boat and stand on the deck. Look up at the sky. Nothing but blue. Not a single cloud. The ocean is pretty calm today. Almost like glass. I stare at it. Then look back at Fives Island and make a promise to myself and my future wife.
Chapter 15. Nolan. I feel bad for cutting things short with Mac, but I'm on a mission now. A mission to be a better man, a better father, maybe even a better everything. Halt! one of the little masked miscreants yells as she jumps out of the jungle, pointing her stick at me.
Who goes there?
It's me, I say, annoyed. Then, ow, shit, as the other little delinquent pokes me in the ribs. Didn't even see her. Fucking little villains.
You're our prisoner, the smaller one shouts. March, prisoner!
It occurs to me that it might take a little longer than I thought to warm up to them. It's me, I say again. Nolan Delaney. The taller one lifts up her mask and says, We know who you are, Mr. Romantic. Jesus. What the fuck has Five been telling these kids? Don't call me that, okay? I'm just Nolan now. The taller one, Matilda, I remember, squints her eyes.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Prove it,
she demands. How the fuck am I supposed to do that? The smaller one, Louise, snickers. He said the F word. Matilda pokes me again, harder this time.
Ow, damn it, stop fucking poking me. You're not supposed to swear in front of children, Mr. Romantic.
Matilda sneers my name. Again.
Yeah, Louise adds. Mommy says it's inappropriate. Are you inappropriate?
Matilda asks.
Sorry,
I say. Just stop poking me with that stupid stick. I'm friendly, remember? I need help.
What kind of help?
Louise asks. She lifts her mask up now, too, and points her wide eyes at me.
We don't help prisoners, Matilda says. Unless you pay us,
Louise laughs. Then they're both giggling. Okay, I say, rolling my eyes. Fucking kids. I take out my wallet and start pulling out bills. How much do kids get paid for shit these days? $5? I hold out 2 fivers. Here, one for each of you. How's that? They giggle again.
Not with money, Matilda says.
Yeah, Louise chirps. We can't spend money on the island.
Then what do you want?
They both look at each other. Sly grins creep up their elfish faces.
What?
I ask, getting tired of these games real fast. Just tell me what the hell you want. They both poke me this time. Hard.
Jesus Christ, man, stop that. I'm a friendly.
Matilda motions for Louise to follow her over behind some large palm fronds, and they have a secret parley about me. There's lots of whispering and dramatic sighs. Maybe I should just resign myself to my fate as a totally inappropriate father and go find Ivy. She's a great mother. Does Bronte really need me? I mean, really? These fucking kids are right. I'm not a role model. And these thoughts about wishing for a boy just prove it. Not to mention, I don't even have the good sense not to swear in front of Five's little wannabe She-Ras. I have this fucked up reputation, and one day Bronte is going to read about me on the internet. Or worse, her friends will. And they'll be the ones to tell her who I am. What I am. I feel sick. Because there's nothing I can do about that. Ever. I can't erase history, or take back all my mistakes, or nothing. I am Mr. Romantic, for better or worse, forever.
Okay,
Matilda says.
We might be able to make a deal.
I don't know, I say, resigning myself to my fucked up future. This is probably stupid anyway. Never mind. I'm never going to turn into Mr. Respectable. I turn to walk back to the cabana, but Louise and Matilda both grab my wrists and make me stop. I look down at them. I wonder if they know who their father is. Really is. But Five Aston has flown under the radar for decades. He wasn't accused of rape. He wasn't given an ironic nickname. He didn't do anything as far as the rest of the world is concerned. If anything ever leaks out and people find out about this island and his secret family he's hiding out here, he'll just be another eccentric billionaire who likes his privacy. And yeah, I read all about his father, Ford, and Rory and Cindy's father, Spencer. And even though there are a few parallels, They were accused of murder, after all. And they fucking did it. It's not the same. Being accused of rape is so much worse. Because people survive rape. They have to live with it. They remember. No one remembers that guy they killed. No one cares because he was part of something sick and disgusting. And if they do remember anything about that whole fuck-up, it's that Ford, Spencer, and Ronan were trying to save women, not hurt them. What? I ask them. We can help you, Nolan, Matilda says. If I help you, I finish. Yes, Louise says. Well, what's the price? I might not be able to afford you. They laugh at that. You can, Matilda says. Come with us. I follow them through the jungle for so long, I start to get paranoid. If they were a little older, I might think this was a setup. Five Aston has been one surprise after another from start to finish. Why wouldn't his children be the same way? Maybe they're going to tie me up somewhere? Poke me with those sticks a little more? Then laugh in my face as they... Okay, Matilda says, halting her little three-man brigade with one raised hand. That's what we want. If you get us that, we'll turn you into Mr. Respectable, deal? I squint my eyes out at the water and see nothing but, you know, water. You want the ocean? I ask. Not the ocean, doofus, Louise quips. Dem. I follow her pointing finger to a few small specks on the water. Heads, I realize. Animals swimming. What the fuck are they? I deserve the two sharp pokes to my ribs, but I'm about to protest anyway when Louise says, Pigs! We want a pig, romantic, Matilda says. A very specific pig. And you're gonna get him for us, Louise says. I watch from the safety of the jungle as they swim towards the beach. Then one by one they come ashore. The first one is huge. He's got tusks and everything. I watch silently as a few more spill out of the waves after him, all of them equally as terrifying. Fuck that, I say. I'm not getting you a wild pig. Your parents would kill me. No, not them, Louise says. Watch. I do that, and more pigs come out of the water. Smaller ones. Then, finally, one very tiny one.
We want the baby pig, Matilda says. It's gonna die if we don't help it. It's too little.
It's not growing, Louise adds, her voice small and sad now.
We need to save it.
So, if you get us that little pig, Matilda says, we'll help you.
Chapter 16. West. I should be doing date day with my soon-to-be wife, like Nolan, but I'm not. I'm too fucking worried about Ethan to even think about the wedding. I just can't get that conversation out of my head, both the one with Pax and the one with Ethan. I like you guys, so I stick around, but I don't need you guys. We're just born this way. So that's it, I guess. We're just born this way. I love my new son, love him, like he's mine now. And then I wonder if that's how my parents felt about me. Not the biological ones. They never gave a shit. Neither of them. If my mom loved me the way I love Ethan, she wouldn't have killed herself in that restaurant. I mean, I understand it's not reasonable to say she wouldn't have killed herself at all. Mental illness is overpowering in a way that renders you incapable of seeing straight. But she killed herself while I was there. While I was waiting for food in a restaurant. If she loved me, even if she couldn't control her urge to end it all, wouldn't she have made sure I didn't have to experience her final act with her? And my father. Fuck him. Bastard. So that leaves me with the Conrads.
What are you thinking about? Tori asks.
Family. I say. So me and Ethan, she says. Yeah. I sigh. Because that's all I've got left.
They weren't your family, West. I don't know why you can't see this. And it would be completely normal for you to change your name back.
No, I say, cutting her off.
Why? Why would you want to perpetuate the Conrad name after everything they did to you?
But she's missing the point. They did a lot for me, too, you know.
Like what?
Like got me off the fucking beach. Like fed me, like sent me to the best schools.
And they only did that because they knew you had the gold tucked away in some secret spot.
They didn't need the gold, Victoria. They were fucking rich.
Maybe,
she says.
But then you should be asking yourself why they got you mixed up in all that Mr. stuff in the first place.
I know why. It was because they wanted a son in the Silver Society. And the whole fucking thing is wrong. I get that too. But they're the only parents I ever really had, and that has to count for something.
Ethan already left for the beach,
Tori says.
I'm gonna join him.
She turns away from me and walks down the path. And Ethan, I mean, fucking Ethan had parents too. At one point he was part of a family. And yeah, now we're his parents. So how would I feel if he grew up to hate me? Us. Both of us. Even after we loved him, cared for him, and did all we could for him. Even if it was all misguided. I mean, he's gonna find out who I am eventually, right? He's gonna figure all this shit out. He's gonna know I turned on my parents, and then he's gonna wonder, will I turn on him, too? I kinda feel like, if I give up my adopted parents, that means all adopted kids feel like this. That those new parents are just the substitutes. And I don't get why Tori can't see this. She was adopted too. Her father was in some shit too. And even though he's dead and he died saving her, he got her mixed up in things. Awful things, just like my parents did. And yet we don't have this conversation over and over and over about him. I make my way down to the beach to find them. Tori, because I love her, and I know she loves me, and the only reason she's so insistent on this whole Conrad thing is because she hates them. For what they did and didn't do. For the way they used me. All that shit. And Ethan, because I love that little boy. I see myself in him more and more every single day. Which is probably the scary part. What if he's got secrets like I did? What if he betrays me, like I did my parents? And there it is. My problem. I betrayed them. I fucking turned on them. They took me in, gave me a new life. A good life. No. A great fucking life. And yeah, it was based on something dark, and if I'm being honest, probably evil. But it was so much better than I had before. Where would I be now if they had never shown up? Dead? In prison? Crazy? Like my mom? That day my mom killed herself in the restaurant bathroom was the worst fucking day of my life. And the day Mrs. Conrad took me in, that was the best. Never mind all the shit that came after. I felt saved when I became Weston Conrad. I felt saved. But still, it wasn't enough for me to take their side. What if, when Ethan finds out the whole truth about me, he decides I'm not worthy of his loyalty either? What if he does to me what I did to them? Tori and Ethan are swimming out to the rock he was fishing off of last night when I reached the beach. He's got poles, enough for all of us, because that's the kind of kid he is. And bait. He showed me this morning, some little crabs he dug up from the sand before we even woke up. He even brought sunscreen for everyone, because that's the kind of kid he is. Smart. Self-sufficient. Strong. Just like me. One day he's gonna wake up and realize not only does he not need us, but he never loved us either. One day he's gonna walk out and never come back, or worse, he's gonna set me up for a great big fall. Just like me. It breaks my heart. It really does, because I love him. I want only the best for my first son. I want to give him the world, every opportunity, every advantage. And isn't that all my parents wanted, too? And yet, it wasn't enough for me, was it? I turned on them, and Ethan will probably turn on me, too. Because Tori can pretend all she wants that we're the good guys here, but no matter what Tori says, we're not. Maybe we're not the bad guys either, but we're far from perfect. We're flawed, and we make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. I want to forgive my mother. My dad, too. But they're dead now, so that opportunity is gone forever.
Dad!
Ethan calls from his perch on the rock.
Come on! They're biting, and I see lobsters!
I take off my shirt as I walk across the scorching sand. I let the sun beat down on me, let the salty mist sprinkle my face as I wade into the crashing waves. And then I go under. The ocean covers me, blankets me in the past. It cools me down and brings it all back. It feels like home. And I remember. I remember everything. I am thin. Too thin. But I'm lean, too. My arms are long and my body is strong, but there's no fat on me to cushion the blows I took over the past few days, and the bruises are fresh, so they are purple and crimson against my summer-tanned skin. My father is dead. They told me that. So now I have no one.
Hello there,
the woman says.
I'm Mrs. Conrad.
I say nothing. Not because I'm being defiant and surly, but just because I have nothing to say. She wants something from me. I don't yet know what it is, but she wants something from me. Everyone wants something from everyone. It's just the way of the world.
Are you hungry?
She asks. I nod. That's just the truth. And there's no way to hide that fact because my small chest is bare like my feet, and if I were to touch my ribs, I'd feel every single one of them protrude out from my flesh.
Come sit down at the table, she says. We have plenty of food for you here. Do you like seafood?
I shouldn't, because it feels like that's the only thing I've eaten over the past few years. But I do. I love it. It makes me feel free. And every time I eat the day's catch at night, I feel strong. Strong enough to go on another day. And that makes me think that if I consume what's in the sea, I'll live. Even through the beatings. Even through the insults. Even through death. The table is long, and there's a lot of chairs. So many I feel compelled to count them. 16, I come up with. But there are only 3 place settings. One at the very head, near the window that has an expansive view of the ocean waves crashing against rocks, and 2 on either side. A man is sitting in the one at the head. The other 2 are empty now, but I know I'm supposed to sit in one, and she, Mrs. Conrad, will sit in the other. I take my seat and place my hands in my lap to prevent them from grabbing at the crab legs stacked on a large silver platter. You can have one, son, the man says. Have as many as you want. I catch crabs and lobsters almost every day in the summer, but I've never had this much food in front of me at one time.
Do you like it with butter?
Mrs. Conrad asks. She recognizes the look on my face as confusion, so she adds,
Do you like to dip your crab legs in hot butter?
I shrug.
I don't know,
I say in the strongest voice I can muster up through my split lips.
Try it, she says, dipping some crab meat into a small dish on her plate and then putting it in her mouth. She smiles through that first taste. Mmm, she hums. It's good. And it has calories you need. I don't need the extra calories, she laughs. But you do. If you dip it in butter, it will taste even better than you can imagine. And it'll make you stronger, too. Help you heal, she adds. I pick a crab leg from the platter and crack it near the claw, then dip the claw in the butter and suck out the meat. My head swoons. That's how good the butter tastes. My whole body vibrates from the food after being starved for 3 days. I eat. Like really eat for the first time in my life. I eat everything they put in front of me. Later I get sick and throw it all up, but I don't care. Because there's a never-ending parade of food in this place they say is now my home. And these people who tell me they are now my parents are going to give me everything I need. Anything I want. Forever. And ever. And ever.
Chapter 17. Pax. I roll over on the bed, so fucking hot I'm sticking to the sheets. I need water. Water! I croak, hoping Cindy will hear me, take pity on me, bring me water. But I get silence in return, so I open my eyes. Well, it's a little more complicated than that. You know when you try to open your eyes, but that shit is heavy, like they're practically glued together? I only manage to raise my eyebrows. Sin! I croak out again. Silence. Cookie! I sound like fucking Cookie Monster, that's who I sound like right now. I roll over once more, fall off the bed, land in a tangle of sweat-soaked sheets, and give up. I might even doze off a little, because the next thing I know I'm being kicked, and someone is saying, Mysterious? You live down there? I raise my head, manage to open one eye, and stare up at Five Aston. Dude, I say, I need water. I think I say that. It mostly comes out as growls and grumbles. But a few seconds later, he sets a glass down on the floor.
What the fuck happened to you, dude?
I don't answer. Just sit up, lean against the bed, and swallow down the most delicious glass of water ever. I hold it out when I'm done, begging for more. Five rolls his eyes, but takes the glass and returns with more. I gulp that too, then wipe my mouth and say, Where's Cindy?
I don't know,
Five says.
Haven't seen her all morning. Are you still drunk? Dude, you smell.
As with all second-day drunks, the smell eludes me, but I take his word for truth and manage to get myself upright and on my feet. Why are you here? I ask, sitting back down on the bed before I fall over. I am still drunk. How did I get so drunk?
I need something fixed,
he says, all serious and shit. What? I ask.
I said, I need.
No, dumbass. What do you need fixed? I can hear just fine. He looks at me like I'm a dick, and I am. But Five Aston is too, as far as I'm concerned. We're two peas in a pod. He just hides it better.
My kids, man.
You want me to off your kids? Dude.
Don't be a dumbass. No. I want you to steal the tests they're taking so they can't go to school next year.
Or better yet, he says, getting a little more animated and excited.
No. Let the tests leave the island, then steal them.
And we'll blame it on Ming. He thinks about that for a second and shakes his head.
Nah, I can't blame Ming. That will really piss the girls off. We gotta do this today.
I just look at him. What the fuck are you talking about?
My kids, man! My kids are taking some school entrance exams and they're little fucking geniuses, okay? They're gonna ace that shit. They're gonna get into the best fucking school on the planet.
So, what's the problem? Maybe I'm too drunk to understand, or maybe I'm just slow. But I have no clue where this is going.
They can't leave the island.
Why?
Why?
He spits.
Why? You of all people know why, Mysterious. Everyone is out to get us.
I actually laugh at that.
It's not fucking funny, okay? I've kept them safe for 12 years and now Rory's insisting that they go to school.
Don't all kids go to school?
Are you a moron? Do you not speak English? They can't leave. Someone will find them, Pax. I gotta keep them here for their own safety. I can't let my little girls out in this world. It's too fucked up, man. I rub my hand down my face. I really need a shower. So let me get this straight. You think you can keep your kids from growing up? I laugh. Pretty loud, too. No, Five says. But they're only 12, man. 12. He grabs the collar of my t-shirt and pulls me to my feet, shaking me along the way for good measure. You're not listening to me. I need this fixed. I'm pretty sure you owe me, Mysterious. I saved your ass. Yeah, and got both my islands blown up with that stupid plan of yours. That was you, dude. That plan was yours. Oh, yeah. Kinda was, wasn't it? Well, fuck. I'm not sure I agree with you, bro. Kids gotta go out into the world sometime, right? Just deal with it. Where the fuck is Cindy? Five glares at me, like he maybe wants to punch me in the mouth right now. But he takes a deep breath and says, Cindy's gone. Gone where? I ask. He holds up a piece of paper and it takes me a minute to realize what it is. Then I snatch it out of his hand, my heart racing like it might gallop right out of my chest. And then I realize it's a joke. Sorta. She left this on the bedside table. Presumably this is some kink the two of you do? I read the note, which is cut out magazine letters pasted onto a piece of paper, classic kidnapper style. It says, Help, I'm being held prisoner in a cookie factory. I laugh. Goddamn cookie factory. She's so damn cute, right? Then I look up at Five and say, Seriously, dude, where is she? He grins. Kind of an evil grin, if I do say so. She ran off, he says. That's all I know. And then he winks. Like actually fucking winks at me. But if you help me, if you do me this favor, I'll tell you where I think she went. Because what I do know, Paxton Vance, is that she's not coming back unless you find her. Heard her tell Ellie that this morning. She's sending you on a hunt, my friend. And I also heard her say, and this is word for word, that she's gonna make you prove yourself before she shows up at that wedding. I really am drunk right now, right? How long was I asleep? Take it or leave it, man. And then he looks at his watch. The kids still have a few more hours of testing, so I'll give you the first hint for free. But if you cross me, Mysterious, he makes a slicing motion across his throat. I'll gut you. I might actually be having a stroke, or maybe I slept for like 100 years like that Rip Van Winkle dude. Deal? I sigh as I stand back up, being more careful this time so I don't wobble too much and fall over. Whatever. You want me to fix your kids by stealing their dreams? Fine. Now tell me where to find Cindy. Cookie factory is the clue, right? Five says. I look down at the note. Guess so.
Well, that's gotta be the kitchen house.
Rory and the girls have been baking stuff for the wedding all week. Come find me this afternoon, and you can pay me back then, okay? But before I can answer, he takes off. Okay, I call out. But I really need a shower, so Miss Cookie will have to wait in her bakery prison a little longer. Because when I find her sweet cheeks, I'm gonna spank them red for driving me crazy, and then I'm gonna roll her around in sugar and lick it all off her. And I won't be smelling like yesterday's drink when I do it. It takes me a while to find the kitchen house. Who the fuck has a kitchen house anyway? Five really needs to invest in some banging AC so he can cook in the real house, if you ask me. But whatever. I see it up ahead now. Just a little brick building on the west side of the house. Kinda hidden by the jungle mostly, but the path leading up to it is straight, so I head that way. I can already smell her. It's probably just the pastries and shit they're making for the wedding, but I like it. I don't call her Miss Cookie for nothing. It smells just like her. I try to picture what she's got planned for me. She was all into that date-day thing last night. I don't remember much about what happened yesterday beyond my fascination with the I Wanna Be an Airborne Ranger song, but I never forget anything about my cookies, so that all came back to me. She's probably gonna be naked. We fuck in the kitchen all the time. Once I even came home to find little chocolate chips glued all over her body with dried honey. I ate dessert first that night. I can't really see inside, and I can't hear nothing as I walk up to the door either. But I can imagine it. Oh, fuck yeah. I kick the door open like a badass and yell, I'm here to save you, Miss Cookie! And get silence. Cookie! I call out. Cindy! You here? There's lots of flour scattered all over the place, and sugar,
And now that I look closer, I see red frosting on the counter and a whole tray of cookies scattered on the floor. I shake my head. Damn, she's good at this detective game, isn't she? Cinderella! I sing out. Where are you?